Welcome to Driven Minds. I'm Gigi, and this is a Type 7 podcast. Our guest today is Michaela J. Rodriguez, also known as MJ. Michaela is an actress and singer who rose to stardom when she was cast as Blanca in the hit TV series Pose. She became the first transgender actor to be nominated for an Emmy and to win a Golden Globe. You also might know her from her current role in the TV series Loot, in which she stars alongside Maya Rudolph. So here it is, my conversation with Michaela J. Rodriguez, recorded live in New York City. Before we start off, do you prefer Michaela J. or Michaela?
Michaela is fine. Michaela J. is good with me. Even if you call me MJ, I'm always cool with it.
Okay. Okay. And for the past two seasons, or three seasons, actually, I realized that I've always introduced the guest, and I am no one's spokeswoman. So, Michaela.
Yes.
What do you want people to know about you?
I want people to know that aside from me being just, you know, intellectually driven and all those good things, I am a foolish, fun, goofy, and personable human being. And so many people see me in this light of responsibility, which I take on wholeheartedly. I like to make sure that I'm well-informed and also fighting for communities that are not or do not have the voice. But outside of that as well, there is a human being that is fun, giddy, stupid, silly, and quirky.
And she reigns from the East Coast?
Yes, I do. Born and raised, Brick City, Newark, New Jersey. If y'all never heard, you better check it out.
And you've said your mom is the most influential person in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any memories from childhood that particularly stand out, that kind of solidified the bond, or, I don't know, just a memory that means a lot to you?
Yeah, there's a prominent phrase, and if I mess it up, Mama, please forgive me, because you will get in my case for sure. But there was a prominent phrase that she used a lot. It was, if you're going to go out here and do something, you better do it good and to the best it can be.
Emphasis on do it.
Exactly. Just do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of lived with me, not only through my childhood, but through adulthood. She would always make sure of that. And I mean, as an adult, I was like, thank you, Mommy. I know, girl. You know, I heard this for a long time. I appreciate it. But like as a child, when you hear that from a person who looks so big and powerful and strong, right? Mm-hmm. When you're 4 or 5 years old, they look like freaking giants.
Yeah.
And when you hear those words, those giants have a lasting effect on you. Those words are even louder. So I just let that sit with me. And I don't think I wouldn't have been here if she wasn't saying those uplifting words to me.
Yeah. And was there any particular moment with her or visual memory that you have?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I will never forget. It was Golden Globes, I think 3 or 4 years ago. It was my first Golden Globes. And we, as Pose, were invited because we had been nominated as a show. And I remember I was so nervous and I was so scared. And nothing had happened yet. But I had this, like, feeling of anxiety of something about to take place right. that I felt I wasn't ready for. So I remember being in the Wilshire, Beverly Wilshire. We were on, I think, the 11th floor. And I just like laid on my side and my knees. And I was just like on my mom's lap. And I started crying. And I was just like, I don't know if I can do this. And she was like, you got to. Not only can you do this, but you have to. It's important. Mm-hmm. And she was just rubbing my head as she was saying it. But I took those words with me, and I think I'm going to take him to my grave. It felt like a princess moment actually being with a queen. Like, the princess is like, I'm not ready to be a queen yet. Like, I don't even know what this is. Like, yeah. I don't even know if I have a crown yet. I don't even know what it looks like. I hope it got sapphires and rubies in it or something. But, like, I didn't know what right. I was capable of. And my mom knew. I mean, they always do.
They really, really do.
They do.
And was she the one who encouraged you to get into acting, or how did that unfold?
Yeah, she did. She saw that I had a lot of energy in me, and she saw where I put it. Mm-hmm. She saw where I obsessed over it. And I say obsessed because I'd like to think that I have ADHD. I don't want to diagnose myself because I haven't been diagnosed. But
yeah. Oh, I feel like you know if you do.
I
have it. I feel like you know.
I believe I do, and I see a lot of the signs. But a girl is thriving, and she's here. You know, she's great. But my mother saw that I obsessed over acting. There were times when I was in school, and I wasn't applying myself like how I should have been, mm-hmm. and obviously due to other things. And she just, like, dropped me in the arts because she knew that was something that I was just, like, swimming in easily, like backstrokes, honey, floating,
right.
You know, all of those things, any kind of terminology I could use, that's what it was.
Right.
And as she saw that I stuck with it, she just stood 10 toes down right behind me and just helped me on through my way into the creative world.
And when did you start doing that backstroke? And what was the discipline? Was it acting, singing? How old were you?
Well, I will say I started doing that backstroke while I was in her womb, honey. Okay. Just okay. To let y'all know. But I will say around, like, professionally, yeah. It was around like 9, 10.
Okay.
My first opportunity was with the Thanksgiving Day Parade. And my mom,
the Macy's Day Parade.
The Macy's Day Parade.
I watched that every single Thanksgiving so religiously.
Oh, you do?
I probably saw you on that float.
2005, honey, our float shook right while we were on camera, and I almost fell and bust my butt, but I went right back into that choreography. It was important.
How'd you get on this float, may I ask?
Okay, so I was in this youth Broadway program called Camp Broadway.
Okay.
And I auditioned singing, I Think Everything Must Change, Olita Adams version. And they were like, you got it. Like, come on, kid, you're in. You know, go back out there and tell your mom, like, that you got it. That's how it happened. I was with them for about 4 or 5 years, I think, going back and forth. And I feel like I'm indebted to them because they gave me, like, the traditional, true training of what New York East Coast gives you. Mm-hmm. And it helped me because I'm now able to just sustain over in Hollywood. So thank you, East Coast. But that's how it all started. And everything sprawled out from there. Some of the producers and the teachers and, you know, the directors who were coming in as guests, they were mentioning me and some of the other kids to, you know, some high profile people. And I got my first opportunity singing with Kathy Lee Gifford.
How old were you?
And I was 11,
oh,
I think.
Wow. Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Kathy Lee Gifford and Tony Danza.
Tony Danza.
Tony Danza. Can you believe that? I saw him and I was like, oh my God.
We're dating ourselves right now. Mega, you know?
I know, right? Isn't that crazy? But we still look great, y'all. I mean, look at her. She
100%.
Looks like she's about 16.
Oh, you too. Out of the womb.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Okay, so we understand our kind of banter.
Completely.
New York banter.
Come on.
And then after that, I will say that's how, like, I solidify myself. I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm not going to stop. My mom doesn't have to, you know, keep the training wheels on anymore. Actually, instead, I threw those things off and started running full speed ahead. Mm-hmm. And I got myself into art school, which was Arts High in Newark, New Jersey.
And you were still in high school at this time?
No, actually, believe it or not, I was from 9 to maybe even 12.
Okay.
That's when all of, like, Camp Broadway and stuff happened.
Oh, wow.
Then when 13 and 14 happened, she took a break and she was like, you're not doing that anymore. And I was like, why? I love it. And she was like, no, I'm not trying to get you caught up and for you to burn out quickly. So instead, we're going to put you in art school.
Okay, so before this, you weren't in any sort of performing art school. You were like Newark school.
Yeah, I was at a Catholic school. I mean, I was going to a...
how was that?
It was great. It was an all-women school, so I felt great.
I went to an all-girls school. Too.
Yeah. Excuse me, let me correct that.
Sorry.
It was called Queen of Angels and it was ran by women. So every... Okay. Person who was from the staff to the principal, women.
Okay.
While I was going to Catholic school, I was still going to, like, the Young Artist Institute. So there were, like, after school things that I would go to, but not a school that was heavily rooted in the arts. When high school came, that's when I got in. And actually, believe it or not, I went to the same school as Michael B. Jordan, which I'm going to always pump up because me and him are now cool. Hey, Michael. And my mom was just like, you need to go somewhere, one, where you can grow and learn about other teens and also be invested in the arts and learn a little bit more that's a little bit more intricate and not so surface level. Right. And when you're a child, it's surface level. You're singing. Right. They're not giving you the complete in-depth music theory. They're not giving you the, you know what I mean? So she placed me in arts high school. And I feel like even though it was academically heavy, I obviously didn't apply myself academically. And I went towards the arts.
Were you the slacker in the back?
I was kind of the slacker in the back. I was. I was the kid that was like, I'm going to Dr. Forte Hayes. He was my classical teacher because I went and learned classically for 4 years with him. And I'm like, I'm going to Dr. Forte Hayes' class because I need to just sing today. And they were like, no, Michaela, you got to go to class. It's like in 5 minutes. And I was like, you're right. I'm going to go.
I mean, it honestly is also no wonder. I was thinking about the things that I was forced to learn when I was younger, like biology, calculus. Where did this go? Did this contribute at all to my job? In any vocation I have ever had, hard no. So
right, it's you know, hard no.
I mean, was also slacker in the back.
Well, hello, slacker. It's nice to meet you. I'm a slacker as well.
Unite.
I mean, I grew when I was in college, but when high school was as we all know, kids in high school, y'all, like, we're crazy.
Totally.
You know?
How'd you go in college?
College was easy for me. That was my element. I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston, and I met a lot of wonderfully wizardy and witchy, musically inclined people. I thought it was the Hogwarts of music and, you know, instrumentation. And I only went for a semester, but that semester taught me enough to feel comfortable enough to take on the world.
When did Rent happen? Because I know that that had a huge impact on your life.
It did. So while I was in the last terms, we were doing finals at that time. And I was like, oh my God, I can't wait until I go into my second year. We have our finals. And at this time, I had been going back and forth to New York City for final callbacks. And I remember asking my guidance counselor at the time, Lynette Giddens, and my music coach, Winston McCoo. And I asked the advice from them. I was like, you guys, I mean, I got this big opportunity to possibly be in this show called Rent. And I don't know what to do. Like, I want to stay in college because this is the best thing I've ever experienced. And this is not like any other college I've been to. But also, this is a big opportunity for me. And I've always wanted to play this character because she's me. She's me. And I remember Lynette Giddens saying, you need to stay in school. It's really important. We don't want you to leave. And it's important that you stay here because you have to get your scholarship. And her husband, Winston McCoo, said, well, I'll give you credit if you decide you want to go to this thing. So they left me with the decision.
House divided.
House the freak invited. And after they gave me that, this was literally the day before I had to go back to final callbacks. I went to final callbacks, got the part, stayed in Jersey, and the rest was history.
Wow. It's so funny. I was in New York City when the Broadway production of Rent started, and I was in high school. And that musical swept my school. My best friend saw it 20 times, and I actually called her last night to, like, confirm a few details. She laminated a photo of the lead and put it in her wallet. And then she also started calling people using, like, the phone book. Remember, like, those New York City phone books?
Yes.
She stalked cast members, calling them at their house because she was so obsessed.
I'm not mad at her because I probably would have did the same thing.
By the way, I would have, too, if I was obsessed with something, you know? So she was so obsessed. So that should give you an idea of how canonical that was.
It is.
Before you were in Rent, what significance did it have for you?
I remember going to see Rent, the movie, at 14. This is while I was in college, and I went with my dad. I had known about it ever since I was younger, but I couldn't really go and see it because I was young. When the movie came out, that was the only time I really could have, like, the right to see it because I was 14, and kids understand these things at 14 and 15. And the only person I really could completely resonate with, I loved all the characters, but was Angel. And I told my dad, I said, that's me. And I remember my dad saying, in due time.
Do you want to talk about Angel for anyone who hasn't seen Rent?
Yes.
By the way, see it.
Yes, please. If you haven't, like, check it out everywhere. It's everywhere. You have the stage live performance. You have the movie. Angel Dumont-Chouinard is this beautiful character. She's gone through so many different transformations. Some people play her as a drag queen. Some people play her as gender nonconforming. I played her as trans. I believe she's a light. And she is a spokesperson for all parts of the community who have been through something, who have also endured and have triumphed over HIV and AIDS, and is a beacon of hope for the people who feel like even if you think there's darkness, like, there's still light at the end of the tunnel. And though Angel passed away in the flesh in the show itself, obviously because it was in the 1990s and they didn't have a lot of treatment for HIV and AIDS, she's still, her light and her essence in the show itself lasted. And I believe that's who Angel is. She truly is that. An angel. She came in for a moment. I think she knew what her purpose was, which was to lift people up, to show them that there's no day but today. And you have to live for the moment. You can't just squander the time that you have in the day because tomorrow is not promised. So that's who Angel is. And I hope people take a note out of her book. I did, for sure.
In what way did you?
I could be gone.
Yeah.
At the drop of a dime. There's so much happening in the world right now with trans people. Like, I could be gone. Like, it doesn't matter my status as a celebrity. Like, it really doesn't. Someone could possibly, God forbid, take me out simply because of who I am. no matter how much happiness I harbor, no matter how much love I harbor, sometimes haters, they resort to that kind of violence, that kind of tactic. So, yeah, I live for today. And any way I can influence anyone around the world through love, I'm going to do it. I don't care how much you hate it or not. That's why I say F the people who are actual true wicked haters. Because, I mean, no matter how much I say F you anyway, y'all still going to, you know. So, yeah, that's why she means that much to me. That's why I live by that, because there is no day but today.
Yeah. That was really beautiful, by the way.
Thank you.
It's funny because, speaking of haters, there were girls in my class whose parents wouldn't let them see the show. And I remember I saw it when I was like 15, 16. And first of all, I was aware of the talk about it, right? That it was like this show that was politically heated somehow. So I remember going and seeing it, leaving the theater and genuinely not understanding why parents wouldn't want their kids to see the show. For me, it was about a group of people that were cool as fuck, doing cooler, more interesting things than anything I was doing in high school. And I just seriously, it was just a group of colorful people living their lives on a rad set. I just didn't understand, like, what do you think it was about the show that pushed so many people's buttons?
I think the most poignant thing about that show and why it affected so many people who didn't let their kids go and see it was truth. And heavy truth at that. I mean, what parent wants their child to see, especially if they're queer, the possibilities in that time of 1991 or 1994 when it like kind of really came out? What parent has the courage to let their child see what is going on in the world through art? They don't. And especially at that time when being conservative was a huge thing. But I think truth sets you free. When I saw it, I saw myself. I also saw some of my friends who were not LGBTQAI. Who were allies in that show. They were a bunch of beautiful, outstanding, groundbreaking misfits. I like calling myself a misfit. I think that's what it was. It was the truth of knowing that if they see their child and they don't know how to accept or protect their child, that there will be someone out there that's going to protect them. And that they may not have a hand in that. And that they may have lost out. And also that there could be a possibility that they didn't protect them enough to have them be well educated about an autoimmune disease that could possibly affect their child or even them. So it's truth. It's heavy truth. And some people can't handle the truth. You know?
There's also probably like a fear from parents of identification, right? Like if their children identify with characters that are ostensibly, you know, really heavy air quotes, a threat in any way, right? To bring ideas and poison the youth. I think that entire rhetoric is so outdated and so absolutely insane.
Don't even get me started on that because I just don't know where my... When I see what's happening in the public eye, it astounds me how much work and effort people will put into not trying to understand the unknown. It astounds me, especially when we as people who are queer or as women constantly have to put ourselves in the line of fear and show up and actually constantly make ourselves seem like these strong people. Why do we have to do that when... Honestly, the people outside of that should be doing the work to make us feel protected. I think that's what it is.
I mean, I feel like you get that a lot. Men are just thought to be these helpless, virile, nothing can keep them down. And women have to dress a certain way in order, you know, otherwise it's her fault. It's so rudimentary.
I always try to say forgive me, but this is not a forgive me moment. I could care less as a woman, like as a trans woman at that. I have to be very clear about that. As a trans woman, I could care less what a man thinks about me and how I'm supposed to move in this world. I was told by my cousin, her name is Chanel Rodriguez. She's a principal. And I'm not going to quote her completely. But she said something to me when I got an award, another award, as a woman in Hollywood. And I got a lot of backlash. And she said, you're always going to be hated as a woman, girl. Men can't take it, no matter if you're trans or if you're cis. And I was like, I wish some of my people would understand that, but they just don't. But it's true.
Yeah, it's totally true.
Always. So I say keep hating. Because the reality is that you live for it.
And then between Rent and Pose, mm-hmm. which I know completely changed your life.
It did.
What did your life look like?
There were 3 years in between where I didn't have any work. Mm-hmm. And I knew why. People didn't know how to place me. Mm-hmm. They didn't want me to go into a space and no one know that I was trans. Not knowing that I was trans and to find out, right? Mm-hmm. So I knew how that was happening. And for a while, I just was like, oh, I see what's happening. I'm not the cup of tea that people may want at this time. But I kept going out for casting calls. I didn't stop. Yeah. The one thing that changed it, though, I thought an audition was going to change it. Child, a video of me singing Satisfied from Hamilton changed it all. Can you believe that?
No, I have never heard this.
Isn't that crazy? It changed. Well, because Facebook, child, Facebook is long and past. We love you, Facebook. We're not shading you, but it happened on Facebook, so it makes sense how you didn't see
Usually
it.
Usually it's like a YouTube discovery, right? I okay, feel like all these Justin Biebers are always, it's a YouTube song,
I should have been
Eilish,
on YouTube
you know?
At that time, too. Oh, we love Billie Eilish. I love that you made that reference.
We do,
hey, Billie.
We do.
But yeah, that's how it happened. It happened on Facebook, and I had already let the world know who I was. Okay. But I remember singing Satisfied, and then all of this kind of press started coming out of it, and then that's when things started sprawling, like, out of control with positivity. When I say positivity, I'm talking about like offers and opportunities and more auditions.
From Facebook. From this one video.
From the one video. And then another year went by and I remember telling my mom, okay, I'm not doing this no more, girl. I can't. I'm getting 250,000 no's. And there were a lot of no's. And it was starting to weigh heavy on my mental as being a trans person. Like I'm going into these auditions, I'm singing my life away and I'm bearing my soul, and I know I'm qualified, but I know the one thing that's holding me back. Then Pose came. My first offer on Broadway happened in Pose.
At the same time.
Same time.
Before we get into
yes.
this uphill, mm-hmm. steep incline
steep,
in your life.
Girl, I'm talking about like, where's my climbing gear? Because y'all didn't prepare me. Sorry, go ahead.
What kept you going during this time? I mean, you're told no after no. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with your talent, which is somehow even more frustrating, right? Why did you keep going?
I knew there were people who were a part of these companies. The people behind the desks were rooting for me. Right. I also knew I was rooting for myself because I knew I had to stand out and stand up for someone.
Most important thing, by the way, rooting for yourself.
Exactly. Because you know? If you didn't have it, I mean, if no one has it, we know how you can succumb to that.
Yeah, of course.
But it's beautiful when you learn the confidence, when you gain the confidence in yourself. And that's what I did. Mm-hmm. I just kept saying, okay, if this is a no, this is just going to light a fire under my ass to go up in there and hear another no again and right. let you know, I know that I'm not getting this part, but I know you remember me.
And in what ways was it weighing on your mental health? And what did that look like for you?
It was a little heavy. I'm not going to lie. I did go through some times where I was a little bit depressed, mm-hmm. but it didn't last long. Mm-hmm. Maybe a week.
What helped you get out of your depression? Was it the next casting?
I'm a working girl. My family was always working. It didn't matter if it was in the arts or not. I was always someone who was like, well, I mean, an audition is work for me. So I'm going to go to this audition. This is what gets me happy. So yeah, it was easy for me to just like not think about the no because I was on to the next audition.
Yeah.
But more importantly, aside from me just loving to work, which is a problem, I need to take a vacation when I know I need to take a vacation, which will probably happen in 2 years, was my family. Uh-huh. My mom, she helped out with everything. She helped me get my SAG card. Mm-hmm. She took me to these auditions sometimes. She was there with me at these really strong and powerful auditions to be my source of support when I knew I wasn't going to get it, but getting a final callback meant a lot. And I was like, I need someone there, the roots to be there. And both of my dads, mm-hmm. you know, my second dad and my first dad, they
Your
were there.
Your parents are divorced.
Yes.
Okay.
I love how you get to see she gets it. Some people don't get it. They're like, you have two dads? I'm like, yeah.
Also
I do.
Possible.
Yes, exactly. Like, let's not be. Hello? Anyways, but thank you. But yeah, they were very strong figures. And uh-huh. I always like to say, even though there is this kind of like looming idea of the African-American community when it comes to people who are queer, there are people in the Black community who love their children and who care and who water them, who make sure that soil is clean and make sure that they're getting enough sunlight mm-hmm. so that they can blossom. And that was my two dads and my mom.
Right. Not to belabor this period of time when you were struggling, but you know, I'm always in awe of the stories that people have to tell of how they got through the roughest periods of their lives, because that is the period of growth. That is the period when most people give up.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, very few people see the other side of that, let alone become a success story like you. So,
thank you.
I mean, it's true. You must know this, right? It's so much easier to give up. And when the whole world is telling you to give up, it takes so much chutzpah mm-hmm. to like say fuck you to them.
Yeah.
So during this time, how are you supporting yourself?
I cried a lot. I think that was the best thing for me. Like, I cried. I wasn't afraid to cry. Mm-hmm. I knew that was the best way to release endorphins. And I knew that was going to help me get through to the next day. I would have held it in and I would have pinned it up. I knew I wouldn't probably succeed. So I cried a lot. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds sad, but hey, it happened. I love to. I do. I was crying earlier today, y'all.
I have a cry song.
It feels... Oh, you do?
Yeah.
I have to hear it.
Billie Eilish.
Oh, okay. I should know this. I should know this.
I feel like everyone has a cry song now.
Do I have a cry song?
Like the thing that you go to put on when like everything's shit and you need to get it out of you and you just like want companionship and that's not a person.
Okay, we're finding so much out about her today. Wait, can I just tell you? Okay, so I do have a cry song.
Okay.
And it's the most recent Melanie Martinez song. It's called Death. Now, I know you're probably thinking like, oh, why is she listening to a song,
no,
Death?
But I love it. I love it. I'm a Scorpio. I love that shit.
Okay, so you get this. You understand
beyond.
It. It's actually a song about rebirth.
Okay.
And, we can all look into Melanie Martinez and see what that girl's gone through. But the rebirth of her, it inspired me. So I have a cry song. That's my cry song. It's called Death.
Okay.
If you listen to it, it's actually beautiful.
Adding that to my playlist.
Please do. Can I just cite some lyrics real quick?
Please.
She says, I don't want to be carrying the weight on my shoulders. Death has come to me, kissed me on the cheek, gave me closure. Immortal by design, I'll be seeing you till the end of time.
Wow.
Back from the dead. Back from the dead. I take those words and I live by it.
That's beautiful, especially because then I get like really analytical. I'm like, well, death can also mean death of one chapter, the beginning of another. It's not necessarily your death, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, I rewrite.
She's an artist. She understands these things.
Pose.
Mm-mm.
You get this. You land the Broadway part. Are you living alone right now? Are you living with your mom?
With my family.
You're living
bro.
With your family.
Whole
okay.
family.
So you're commuting from Newark to the city.
Sure
for
am.
The. I just want to fully get the,
yes.
the full picture of Michaela here at
so,
this point.
Born and raised in Newark, so I was over there
right.
while all of this was happening. I lived with my mom, my dad, my second dad, my two uncles, my grandmother, God rest their souls. And I was going back and forth to New York City on the PATH train sometimes, on the New Jersey Transit. I remember within the 2 weeks of not hearing anything from just anything, mm-hmm. the opportunity of Once on This Island came and Pose. And I had been hearing from my girlfriends. They were like, have you heard about this show? It's called Pose, girl. Have you read the breakdowns? It's on Telsey and Company. And I was like, yeah, I read it. You know, I got it actually from Telsey and Company and I read through it. And I really would love to be a part of this, but I don't know how I'm going to get in. I talked to my agents at the time. We love them still. I don't know. I don't know if they put me up for it. I think they have. They were like, well, girl, you need to hit them up because they're looking for you. I was like, is that professional enough to hit, like, a studio up? And they were like, just do it. So I did it. And I remember hitting them up, and I got an audition for Blanca. And this is while I was still auditioning for, and final callbacks for Once on This Island.
Right.
And I didn't know at this time how people would feel if I were to make a decision like this. But I made the decision on Pose. And I was so thankful. I felt horrible that I couldn't do Once on This Island because, I mean, I was raised on it. I did it in my high school. And I really wanted to be a part of it.
But Pose was destiny. I mean, there's no one who else would have played Blanca.
Well, thank you for that.
I'm stating the obvious, but.
Well, I'm always the cheesy girl. I'm like, there's always someone out there for the part. But I will say that I knew I wanted television to be my focal point. I love musical theater, but I never saw myself as a girl staying on the stage.
Yeah.
Instead, I saw myself being in the studio and being on a wider mainstream platform.
And Pose was a 6-month casting process, right?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, I didn't know about that 6-month casting process until we were starting to speak about it at junkets and circuits. I only had one audition and then I waited 2 weeks and then had a test and then was in. I didn't know about the 6 months process.
Oh, so your casting process was 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Okay. So Ryan Murphy was like, this girl.
He called me actually before the test.
Did you even audition?
I did. I did one tape.
Okay.
Waited a week.
You sent it in.
Sent it in. They had a whole bunch of girls come in for the part. Girls that I had known too.
Right.
They sent it in. They told me, I think in 2 days I got the call back. And I waited for about a week. And I was like, I got the call back, but I mean, I don't know if I got the part. I didn't get it. Oh my God. Well, at least we have something on the horizon with Once on This Island. So let's do Once on This Island because I really want to do this. At the final callback of Once on This Island, I walk out and I get a call from my agents at the time. And they say, you have a final test with Pose. And I said, excuse me, what? And they're like, yeah, you have to go in tomorrow. And I was like, I'm going in. I got to go in. I mean, this is like, not only is this our story, but like, this is amazing. And the script is great. And the breakdown is, I'm going in. Went in that very day, or at least the day afterwards, I got a call from Ryan Murphy. And he was like, I just want to let you know you have the part. You don't have anything to worry about. I know there's like worry and angst and all these things, but you have the part.
Unreal.
And I cried.
I mean, how could you not?
That I know, right? Like,
canonical. Mm-hmm. And while working on Pose, what's a lesson that you learned on the show that you think everyone should learn at some point in their life?
It doesn't matter if you are cis or trans. Like, there's always going to be a struggle for you as a woman in general. Mm-hmm. But also, there's always going to be triumph. There's always triumph. And the fruits of your labor are the people that you influence. The fruits of your labor, if you are blessed to have kids who you can call your children, whether they be biological or not, that is the gift. The fruits of your labor are the youth who look at you, the young girls who were not just trans, which I was very surprised by because I thought that there would be backlash. Five trans women prolifically being on a groundbreaking show. Mm-hmm. You only expect that, especially if you've never been cast as a trans woman on a show before. So I think what I learned and what I've won were the people that really rock with me in the public eye. And they see that I'm not just doing this just to do it. They see the bigger picture.
Did you see the bigger picture when you were on it?
I saw the bigger picture ever since I was a kid. I knew that the talents that I harbored, they're not mine. That's just number one.
What do you mean by that?
They belong to something much greater than me, I like to believe. I'm a spiritual person. I don't like to consider myself completely Catholic or Christian, like religious. But I do believe there is something that is bigger than us that sees us and that is aware. I believe that this was a plan. Like, it was not just for me to act and be famous, but instead to make a movement happen, to influence people who are from all different walks of life. These are just the building blocks that we have in front of us as the people who are allotted this gift to do what we need to do. That was all I knew ever since a child. I remember praying. And I was like, God, just like, you know, give me the opportunity. I'm a girl and I want you to place me in this position. This was when I was 24. When I turned 25, I got the role of Pose. So I was just
You're
like—
You're 25 in Pose?
I was 25 in Pose, yeah.
That's wild. Mm-hmm. That's so, I mean, that is really young even to just make it as an actress.
I gagged.
Right?
I gagged in the best way possible. Yeah. But yeah, I knew, whether it be manifestation, prayer, whatever you call it. Yeah. I knew when I spoke it out. And I heard within a year later, I was like, okay, yeah, I did. I was a part of doing this. But there was something else that was a part of doing it as well. Right. So I got to keep on with this passion.
What was your most trying day on set?
The whole experience was amazing. But I would say the trying moments were the hours. Mm-hmm. Long hours. Mm-hmm. Sometimes 16. Sometimes 18. Sometimes 20.
That's insane.
It is insane.
But you got the shot.
That's what my mind went to. I was like, this is grueling as hell, but we got the shot.
Yeah.
So you can't be completely upset at that. And I mean, it was just taxing because I had to wake up the next morning.
Right, and do it all over again.
And do it all over again. And mind you, these are feelings that I'm harboring. Like, these feelings have not been able to go home, get a break, you know, leave Blanca at the door. Sometimes Blanca came home with me and she came right back to the set with me. Yeah. But it was all because it was just happening so quickly and one thing on top of the other. But while I think of it and I think of it at this moment, that shit raised me. It made me strong. And I can't wait until I work with, you know, Father Ryan again. I can't wait.
Ryan.
Yeah, he's my Clyde Davis, honestly.
I so believe it. His speech at, was it the Golden Globes?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. When he received that Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yes.
I will never forget that speech for as long as I live.
He, in that moment, changed my life again. But it wasn't through television. That, to me, was a very personal moment. Mm-hmm. He was showing me, I'm glad I could be a part of helping you grow. Mm-hmm. And I was standing there in solidarity saying, yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. I'm glad I could be a part of helping both of us grow.
When you won this Golden Globe, how proud was your 11-year-old self?
She was so happy. And just to let you know, I was being an 11-year-old child when I found out I was on my TV, had my computer hooked up to the television screen, because I play games, y'all, just to let y'all know.
Okay? She's a gamer.
She's a gamer, heavily. And we love a cute gamer, just saying. No, but I was at home. I had my mic in my hand. And I was just like, oh, my God, is this going to happen? Like, is this going to happen? Is it really going to happen? And we saw my picture up there. And it was hard for me to notice myself because I'm usually with long hair. But they had me with like kind of like a Dorothy Dandridge hairstyle. So I was like, who is that? Bitch, that's me. Dropped the mic on my toe, screamed in happiness and also in pain. And that was my story for the whole like finding out of the Golden Globes. I was over the moon. I didn't really have a speech prepared because I didn't expect to win the award. Because, I mean, what trans woman expects to win a prestigious award like that, let alone being nominated?
Is that perspective of the underdog slowly changing for you?
It is. It's slowly changing for me. I like it. I do want more. And I'm not saying me for me. I'm talking about for us. It does feel good to be a part of the movement and shaking things up.
And leading it.
I like that you said that. Because I like leading it too, or being a part of leading it. And I want to see more of my sisters right there next to me being leaders with me. Mm-hmm. And not just my sisters, my trans brothers too. And my misfitted heterosexual people too. Because there are a lot of misfitted heterosexuals out here who don't get the right because they've dyed their hair blue. Or I mean, that's generic, right? But like right. I'm saying yeah, it's different. So it's not the typical. I'm reaching out to them too.
I read in an interview you did with India Moore in, in L'Officiel, where you talk about carrying the trauma of your experiences as a trans woman. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Of course, there's no pressure to go into the details of those experiences. But for anyone who might be dealing with similar trauma, how and when did you begin working through your trauma?
To be honest, I just started working through my trauma. And it feels good. When I was in pose, I wasn't working through it. I thought I had to live up this standard of being the girl who got the work done. Not only was I on pose, but I was number one. So I felt like that was a high position to have. And I just kept my head like a horse with its blinders on. Mm-hmm. It never sat with me until pose was done. And I went into another show that was filled with light and not about the trans experience, where I was like, oh, this is something that I have to deal with. Like, I was actually portraying another person who went through a traumatic experience in 1987. But little do you know, young lady, through 2011 and all the way through 2019, though you and Blanca did not go through the same experiences as trans women, but you still experienced trauma a lot. Mm-hmm. And hitting my 30s, I was like, I need to deal with this. I need to actually talk about it. I need to like
feel it, right?
Feel it, cry it out, yell it out. I pour all of it now into my art. Mm-hmm. Me and Blanca, I've realized, were in juxtaposition, but still parallel kind of similarities, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
And when did you realize that you had all this trauma? Like, was there a watershed moment where it came up for you in some way that you didn't expect it? I mean, for me, that's definitely how my trauma came up. I mean, it snuck up on me. Yeah. I would use means of escaping. I definitely drank when there was no one there. I mean, I'd have like a glass of wine to go to bed, which mm-hmm. doesn't sound like a big deal. And it's not for a lot of people.
But I know
for
exactly.
me,
yep.
I was like, what am I trying to get away from right yep. now? Why do I need this?
Yeah, it's not for leisure. It's an escape route.
Exactly.
Right, yes. Ooh, you're talking on some really good topics. I love this. The moment I started realizing is when I started heavily talking to my girl, Mary Jane. aka weed. I used that, and don't get me wrong, I still smoke her. She's my everything. I'm just going to keep that very 100 because I'm not being candid no more with that. But I didn't know my limits. I was using that as an escape route. I was using that as a way to suppress my feelings and also suppress what I had gone through. And I stopped for a while. Mm-hmm. And I realized the pressure that I wasn't dealing with when I stopped it. Mm-hmm. And I took some time to like meditate and take 20 minutes out of my day every single day to really center myself mm-hmm. and deal with the child
yeah.
that I hadn't talked to in a long time. And as of recently, it just snuck up on me again. I watched one of my videos while I was doing Pose in 2018 or 2017, traveling to Pose to work on the train.
Wait, like you took a video of yourself on the train heading to set?
I used to be on Facebook doing like videos, activism, talking about my experience,
right.
experience as a young trans woman walking through the world. And I was watching a video of myself in 2018 when I was about 27. Mm-hmm. And I was on my way to Pose. And I remember a guy coming up to me before I had even gotten on the train. And he said something really disgusting to me, which I don't want to repeat. But I was so astounded at how I handled it.
Which was?
With grace and kindness and softness. And when I realized when you attack, like, anger with that, it either exacerbates it because the person can't, like, do anything about it. They're just right. like, you're not meeting me where I'm at.
Right.
Once I found that power out, I was like, this is what I need to use. He balled his fist up. He wanted to hit me, but he didn't.
Right.
All because I said, now, why would you say something like that, sir? I mean, look at me.
Oh, and the sir at the end.
That's oh, yeah, just he like didn't the, know
the
what
cherry
to do.
On top, yeah.
And he walked, he paced back and forth on that train station, looking at me, trying to figure out a way to see if I could be by myself and probably do some harm. But I stood firm.
Right.
Those things, I mean, I don't know if this is my trauma response, but it only makes me want to just pump up and like be like, oh, yeah, well, but I gotta go to Pose. I gotta work. I gotta tell a story. I got people who are gonna be wanting to watch this. I can't sit here and stoop to his level and subject myself to violence and possibly not be here because I wanted to talk back. No. Instead, wow.
Yeah.
I can't believe you called me that. Well, have a great day, babe.
Wow. I mean, for me, I'm obviously not a therapist, but that does not sound like a trauma response to me. That sounds like rising above in a way that you are not even called to do, but choose to do anyway.
I'll take that wholeheartedly. I will say there are some parts of me that do shut down. Like, mm-hmm. it's an automatic response to innately do those things, right? It wasn't me thinking in the moment.
Right. Like, I'm going to rise above.
Right. It just came out. The reason why I said that could possibly, and I'm going to take what you said, I'm not going to say it is a trauma response, but the reason why I think it was possibly a trauma response is because there was no thought and there was anger before the reaction.
Right.
Now, the reaction was graceful, but the insides of me were angry. And
right.
all I could do was just like spit out what I knew was in my head at that moment.
Right. When was the first time that you felt anxiety?
Ooh, okay, let me see. I think I can't pinpoint it specifically, but I know it had to do with performing.
Uh-huh.
And it was not good. I had a pretty bad anxiety attack. And I think it was when I was doing a performance at New Jersey Performing Arts Center.
How old were you around?
I was around 12 or 11. And I think it was when I was singing Love's in Need of Love Today, which I sang on Pose. I just was like, 11-year-old, breathing heavily, words not connecting, phrases lost.
Full-on panic attack.
Yeah. And I remember my teacher, Sharon Stevens, said, you got this. And you're about to go on in like 5. So you're going to have to get it together. And I was like, okay. Went out there, blacked out.
Oh my God.
You know how when you black out, I didn't faint, but like, you know how when an artist blacks out and they don't remember anything that they do on this, it might as well be fainting.
That happens to me.
All the time.
I so get it.
Right. So that's what happened. And it was good. It actually turned out great.
So how did you move past that? And how did the fact that it had happened not interfere mentally with the fact that it could happen again? Because sometimes that's enough to psych you out.
It is. I feel like the performance itself, I had to retract back and look at the performance and also see what it did for me. Like, did it make me feel good? Why were you dealing with this anxiety? Were you nervous because you were excited to get out there, or were you nervous because you didn't want to do it? And when I got back home, I was like, oh, I was nervous because I wanted to get out there and I didn't know the expectations of what people were going to see. Mm-hmm. And once my body did what it did while I was out there and blacked out and getting off the stage, hearing people say, oh my God, Kate, you did such a good job. Even still in the adrenaline of it all and the anxiety of it all, I still had some place to put my happiness and my joy. Mm-hmm. So when I went back home, I was like, okay, though I did have an anxiety attack, though I still had to deal with this anxiety afterwards because I have to meet people and I have to talk to them, still dealing with what I had just done on stage, it still affected them. It still made them feel good. Mm-hmm. So how are you going to get past this? How are you going to learn from this? You have to know that when you do go out there, it's not for anything stupid. It's not for something that's not going to mean anything. Mm-hmm. It's going to be for the good of the people.
Right.
So don't stress.
Yeah.
Because it's good.
It's so funny. My therapist told me the exact same thing. I used to get so nervous whenever I'd record a podcast episode, mm-hmm. mostly also because I've set myself up because I talk to iconic people on the show. And as a result, you get like all of the feels,
the
of
jitters,
insecurity,
yep.
and the jitters, the whole thing. But she always says, remember why you're doing it. You're not doing it for yourself.
Right.
It doesn't matter how you sound. It's all about the listener.
It's true.
You know, so it sounds mm-hmm. like it was a similar kind of reframing, right? It's for the audience.
It is. It's only for them.
And especially, you know, what your mission is has nothing to do with you.
At all. At all. I thought in those moments, you make it about you when you get nervous mm-hmm. and you—
Totally.
You know what I mean?
How do I sound? I made a fool out of myself. I.
The eyes, honey. I mean, as humans, we all have to learn, like, when to use that one-letter word.
Has it happened to you since, like, a panic attack? Or?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I've had some of those, like, in the past. They haven't happened recently, but when I was on post, I had a panic attack. And when I had, like, there were a couple of times I've had panic attacks outside of the workplace. And, you know, I didn't say anything to anyone because, I mean, one, it's none of their business. And two, you have all of these things mm-hmm. looming in your head of, like, should I say something about it?
Right. Or should I do something about it?
Or should I, exactly. Or should I do something about it? Now, scot-free, but I'm working on myself. That's why.
Do you have a therapist?
I don't. I do need one. We're going to work on that now. I'm working on that. But I like to credit the work that I'm doing before I get to my therapist, who will be amazing, whoever I meet. Mm-hmm. But until I find the right one, I love the self-work that I've been doing on me. It feels good, and I feel like I'm on the right path.
What form does that take, or what modalities?
Well, most of it is meditating and also, like, taking time for myself and, like, just looking up and seeing that. I know this sounds metaphorical, but when you look up, you don't see a limit. And so many people say the sky is the limit, but I just don't believe that. And I take a moment to go outside and say, even though I can't see beyond this, I know there's something beyond this. So my existence on this earth has to mean something. And if planes can fly that high, then my conscious and my power to influence can fly that high as well. Mm-hmm. So be, just simply be, girl. That's what I say to myself. There are times where I'm in the room and I'm playing Sims. That's also my escape. I play The Sims a lot. I just did something with The Sims. Hey, Sims. Hey, y'all. Hey, EA. And I'm really happy about that. That's also my therapy.
Yeah.
I know that I'm not in control of everything. As you know, I believe in something that has a bigger control. Mm-hmm. So I need some kind of tactic to have control. And The Sims is one way for me to see what it's like as a creator to instill love in something that you like, which is a little sim, a little humanoid, kind of computerized individual, and see what I harbor and how they learn from it.
What was a struggle that you had to go through that was especially difficult, that ended up being an invaluable experience?
Witnessing my grandmother, my aunt, and my uncle pass away, that was a hard struggle for me because they lived in my house. Like, they were there. And I still struggle with it. I went back just yesterday and I walked in that house and it's just me, my mom, and my uncle. Mm-hmm. And these were people who were prominent. Like, they were huge monumental figures in my life. And the struggle of life itself, just knowing you don't bargain with life. Life works on life's terms.
Totally.
And that was hard for me when they left. That was a big struggle for me. I didn't know what to do. I remember... And it was in the height of everything.
Like of your ascent?
Yes. Which it always, that's how it always happens.
Right, of course. When it rains, it pours.
Oh my God.
All directions.
All of them. And mind you, this was all happening while I was up for nominations for Emmy, and I was going to my first Cannes Film Festival, and I'm flying out to another country for the first time that I've never done. I've never flown over to another continent before. This was all happening. And I mean, my grandmother had passed before, and my uncle had died literally right when I was flying over to Cannes. And I was just like, why? Like, why? Why do they have to leave now? Mm-hmm. And I like to think they were like, bitch, we had to leave because we had to help you out. I mean, we couldn't be here in physical form to really help you out. There's only but so much we can do. So I'm sorry. We love you, but we're going to go up here beyond the clouds and shower some blessings upon you. You know, that's the only way we can do it. That's the only supernatural way we can do it. But it was hard. It was such a struggle. And I still struggle with it. Them not being there and walking into a house and knowing that they used to be there. It's hard.
Last question.
Yes.
What drives you?
You knew what you were doing when you asked that question, and I love it. The first thing that comes to my mind are the people of the world. The people of the world who are looking for change in all the right places. That's who inspired me. I'm on Instagram, I'm on TikTok, I'm on Facebook, and I'm not looking at myself. I'm looking at the youth. I'm looking at the people who create content every single day. I look at the people who are yearning to be heard, to be seen, and I'm like, y'all are inspiring me to keep doing what I'm doing so y'all can keep doing what you're doing. Like, I'm a part of that generation now. I'm not a part of the boomer generation. I'm a part of the millennials. I'm still new. And I'm still trying to influence some new shit because we're tired of this old shit. And that group of people, they inspire me. They make me happy. They make me want to constantly keep shifting their perspective. They drive me to go to work. They influence me to have audacity and, like I said, tenacity. And if the people go, I go. So I really root myself in making sure that they feel influenced and empowered.
That, my friends, was Michaela J. Rodriguez. You can follow her on Instagram at MJRodriguez7, and you can follow me at Gillian Zagansky. As always, I want to hear what you think of this episode and every episode or any episode. So DM me, and please don't forget to subscribe and rate us so we know that you're out there alive and listening. Until next time.